from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Hey Jude, be honest. When Sir Paul McCartney whipped off his jacket to reveal, well, his red jersey, did you get a flashback to last year's Janet Jackson wardrobe shocker? What a difference a year makes, and not just for the big halftime show. In the years since Jackson bared her breast on the tube, there's been a moral crusade underway to clean up television. Family values groups have flooded the FCC with indecency complaints. A nervous FCC has been handing out fines left and right. And politics are moving in with a moral vengeance. Fully clothed cartoon characters are being called on the carpet. Networks from ABC to PBS are hunkering down, some say caving in, to an agenda that looks much more pointed than simple decency. Tonight on Point, decency, indecency, and the heat on American TV culture 1 year after Janet Jackson's breast showed up at the Super Bowl. You can join the conversation tonight. Was halftime better for you this year? Were you relieved to have the temperature turned down? Or were you bored out of your gourd? Do we have more decent airways now or selective censorship? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Salt Lake City is Vince Horiucci, television critic for the Salt Lake City Tribune. He's been writing extensively about how television has changed since the Janet Jackson incident last year. Vince Horiucci, thanks for being with us tonight.
Hi, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's look first at the Super Bowl yesterday as a kind of miniature of what's gone on in the last year. A huge change in temperature, in heat from a year ago.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly we've seen a little bit of a cleaner show at halftime, certainly with Paul McCartney, and also, you know, there were news that a couple of commercials were rejected by the network that didn't air and didn't make it on broadcast.
Including one from Anheuser-Busch that would have given its own explanation for how the wardrobe malfunction occurred.
Yeah, you know, and frankly, I thought it was the funniest commercial. It was just happened to be the one commercial that didn't air.
It showed a stagehand before the show. This is a reenactment last year, a notional thing, using Janet Jackson's bustier to open a twist-off bottle of Bud, and then he kind of ripped it, put a piece of tape in there, and the rest is history.
Yeah, and it was very funny, and a Fox spokesman had told me that Fox and Anheuser-Busch had together agreed that maybe it wasn't appropriate to make fun of something that they said people found offensive. Well, I thought it was very funny. I thought it was done in good taste. And that was a victim of this mentality that's sweeping through television land right now.
And it wasn't there. There's been pretty widespread, kind of thumbs down or medium grades for the ads this year. The halftime show, many people might have liked it, but of course it didn't have that hypercharged thing we've become used to in the Super Bowl. Is this indicative of what's going on in television generally, Vince?
Yeah, I mean, it really started right after the Janet Jackson incident. I mean, I remember one of the first things to happen right after that was NBC had elected to cut out a shot from an episode of ER that showed a semi-nude elderly patient in the emergency room. You know, we've seen incidents like 68 ABC affiliates who declined to show Saving Private Ryan because they feared FCC retribution. And these are the same stations that ran that movie uncut and unedited 2 years ago. So it shows you the difference between today and 2 years ago. There's been a whole slew. I've got a laundry list of things of what you might call dirty laundry on television in the last year of things that have happened as a result of really pressure from the FCC and pressure from conservative watchdog media groups that have been putting their pressure on programming.
Now, what do you mean by dirty laundry? Are you talking about salacious scenes that were cut out?
What I mean by is the fact that these are incidents that happen in which there was, because of pressure either by the FCC or from these conservative watchdog groups, these were cases of self-censorship or fines that were levied by the FCC. These are things that were going on that maybe would not have happened 2 or 3 years ago before the Janet Jackson incident. I mean, things like...
We should get a sense for that. I mean, you point out that it was a last-second decision, at least as far as we understand now, by Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake. It went awry. He wasn't supposed to yank off quite that much clothing, and it kind of defined the entire year. And as you put it, how television now functions. Give us some of the examples of what's ensued, Vince.
Well, you know, I pointed out the ER example, the example of Saving Private Ryan. Also, shows like Desperate Housewives was a target of the American Family Association, in which it was targeting advertising support for the show, and some advertisers apparently did pull out. In fact, it even affected the ABC affiliate here in Utah, who decided their owner, Clear Channel Communications, had asked their ABC affiliates to run a parental crawl at the bottom of the show.
All the way through the entire show, saying, parents, watch out?
Yeah, through much of the show, there would be a parental warning that was rolling on the bottom of the screen every I don't know, 15 minutes or so during the show. They did it for a number of episodes. Sometimes they don't do it at all, but the ABC affiliate programming director here in Salt Lake City had told me that Clear Channel had asked its affiliates to consider doing that, and I guess many of them did.
Let me ask you about the Desperate Housewives example, Vince. I mean, on the one hand, it was targeted by one of the groups that's positioned itself as a watchdog for decency on the air.
Right.
On the other hand, it's still very much on, and you'd have to call it salacious. I don't know about indecent, but it's certainly got pretty racy themes.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's definitely a show for adults, but it's on here in Salt Lake City. It's on at 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock, I think, Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely on at the later hour. It's not on at the earlier primetime hour. I think certainly, I mean, it's the, well, until American Idol came on, it was the second highest rated program week after week. People know what this show is. They know what they're in for when they see it. A lot's been written about it. But, you know, that sexiness, that kind of content is also what makes the show fun. It's clearly for adults. I don't think anyone really gets confused about who that program is for, but it's been targeted. Getting back to some other examples,
yeah.
You know, lately there's been a number of them in the last month or so. I mean, PBS in particular, of course, two examples, one in which they're showing an HBO film, a good one called Dirty War. It was originally a BBC production about what happens if there was a nuclear attack in London. And
okay.
PBS had opted to edit out a shot of a woman who goes through a decontamination procedure. And, of course, the most recent example.
And they edited that out because of partial nudity in the procedure.
There was partial nudity in that particular shot. But, unfortunately, this is not, you know, a shot that's used for sexual arousal, but rather it's a shot that's an important part of what's going on in the sense of the story. It's a sort of a shot involving a medical procedure, if you will.
So it's a kind of an example maybe of the urge for or decency or against indecency going so far that you can't even tell the story, a serious story.
Yeah, now PBS will tell you, and they have said that they don't think it has any bearing on the overall story, and I think maybe that's true, but it also is, I think, a detail in the overall story that I think maybe is important, that what these people in this particular fictional incident that happens in the movie, is this is what they have to go through when something like this were to happen. Of course, the most recent example and the most popular example involving PBS is this Postcards from Buster. It's an animated children's television program that PBS had declined to air one particular episode.
This is the cartoon rabbit that visits different kinds of families around the country.
Right. And in this particular episode, he visits a couple in Vermont that is a lesbian couple, and that show, PBS had declined to air that show because they felt, you know, maybe the idea of sexuality and same-sex couples should be best addressed by parents alone and not through a television show. At least that's their explanation. Of course, the same day that they made that announcement, Secretary of Education Margaret Spellings had sent PBS a letter explaining that she was concerned, as I think the word she used, about that particular episode.
The new head of education did not want to see that one on the air.
Right, right. And PBS claims, though, that they had made that decision to not air the episode before they actually received her letter. But, you know, it doesn't escape the fact that PBS is partially funded federally. And, you know, makes you wonder if they're making some of these moves to help appease the administration.
A lot of fines handed out by the FCC this year. Frank Rich wrote in the New York Times yesterday, he said that the Washington Indecency Crusade has unleashed a wave of self-censorship on American television unrivaled since the McCarthy era. You write, Vince Horiucci, that what's going on here threatens to kill innovation and independent thought on television. A year ago this time, people were thinking, something's out of control here. Something's gone too far when the whole country is looking at someone's bare breast at the halftime of the Super Bowl. What are you saying has happened in the ensuing response to that backlash, even?
Well, you mean a response from the government or from the
media? When you say that the response threatens to kill innovation and independent thought on television, that seems like a lot more going on than just responding to one flash of a bare breast at a Super Bowl halftime.
Well, yeah. I mean, the problem is that when we're talking about a creative community that's not only trying to produce television programs but trying to produce art, and I know that we can say a lot about television networks. I certainly do about the quality of programming that they sometimes put out. But, you know, the point is I'd like to see television networks that would try and not have to think about those kinds of restrictions at least too much. I mean, I know that the FCC regulates programming on free television networks, the four main networks or five, actually there's six main networks now. But, to think that, for example, Fox just recently announced that they had to fuzz out a particular shot from another animated program. This in particular is an adult animated program called The Family Guy. That they decided to fuzz out a particular shot that was a nude shot of someone's backside.
It was essentially an infant's, a cartoon baby's bottom.
Right, and I can't remember if it was a cartoon baby or if it was an adult.
I believe it was. That seems like a pretty tough policing
Well, and another example of this is 2 years ago that The Family Guy was a show that was on the air, and because what we're talking about is a rerun here of that show that was first originally aired 2 years ago, and 2 years ago they showed that episode, but today they decided to fuzz out that particular shot.
And of course, Saving Private Ryan got a lot of the same treatment, not across the country, but no small number of stations that said, we can't run that, we're afraid to run that because of the language and what might come back to us. Vince Horiucci, it's great to have you. Stick with us. We're talking tonight about decency, indecency, and the heat on American TV culture 1 year after Janet Jackson's breast showed up for the Super Bowl. You can join the conversation tonight. Have you noticed? Has TV changed for better or for worse? And how do you define better and worse? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here's Paul McCartney from last night. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about decency and indecency and the heat on American TV coverage. 1 year after Janet Jackson's breast showed up for the Super Bowl, you can join the conversation tonight. What do you think? Has TV been cleaned up or bullied into a new political correctness? Was halftime better for you this year? Were you relieved to have the temperature turned down? Do we have, overall, more decent airways or a regime of selective censorship going on? What do you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined tonight from Salt Lake City by Vince Horiucci, television critic for the Salt Lake City Tribune. I'm joined now from Washington by David Folkenflik. He covers media issues for NPR. David, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good to join you.
And from Montclair, New Jersey, by Eric Bollert. He's a senior writer for Salon.com, writes extensively about the media. Eric, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
David Folkenflik, what do you make of what's gone on in this last year? It was that flash image, many people even missed it, of a breast, and then it was gone, and it unleashed something. What would you describe? How would you describe what was unleashed?
Well, I think there was a sense among many people in public life and among, many just ordinary citizens that the pendulum had swung too far, that there was a notion that there was too much explicit sexuality available at a time when people expected, it is one of the most watched shows of the year. It's not shown at 11 o'clock at night. It's shown, starting at around 6. This is a time when families join together and a lot of beer is consumed and people cook and
sure.
It's sort of a traditional thing. And for parents with small children, a lot of them, not necessarily all on the right side of the political spectrum, were pretty upset by that. It's also worth pointing out that the fines that handed out and the climate in which this occurred, it was roughly the same time as the FCC started really to think about and start going after Howard Stern and the question of radio indecency with much more severity and intensity than it had done before. My sense is that these things tend to be on a pendular, cycle, and that at this moment, people, public officials in particular, hearing oftentimes from constituents felt that there was a lot too much liberty being taken on broadcast television.
And yet
this was an incredible moment, an incredible episode that sort of crystallized all that.
A lot of clarity there in that moment. And in its aftermath, a huge increase in the number of complaints coming into the FCC, going up from 100 or so in the year 2000 to more than a million last year. But then a lot of that very orchestrated, David Folkenflik. We're hearing from the Parents Television Council and other groups, family values, quote-unquote groups, entirely focused on kind of policing this stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the, you know, I think there's the old notion that war is politics by other means. I guess that's Clausewitz or something. You know, culture, popular culture becomes politics by other means. Thinking about the news media and attacks on the news media becomes politics by other means. There are interest groups and advocacy groups, many of them ideological, although not all of them, very much involved in this, with the ability for people to write form letters, you know, to whip around email petitions with the internet. It's very easy to gin that up. You know, there's a term for such things called astroturf, where instead of something being bubbling up from the grassroots, it's in some ways orchestrated from, you know, very intentional means by interest groups. And that certainly seems to be part of the dynamic here.
At that point, is the government guarding the citizenry against indecency, or does it, with that kind of political heat at its back, become a kind of culture cop, a kind of nanny state overseer?
Well, and it's interesting you use that phrase. I mean, Michael Powell came in. He's the departing chairman of the Federal Communication Commission. He came in saying he didn't want to be part of a nanny state. He didn't feel it was his role to police the culture on behalf of the nation. He felt families had to do that for themselves, sort of a free marketeer approach to popular culture. He ends out going out having, you know, overseen some very severe fines, having ensured that the commission, in fact, overruled its staff on whether or not Bono of U2 had used a specific Anglo-Saxon term as a noun or a verb, or, you know, whether or not that's finable. And indeed, fines were handed out for the Golden Globes and NBC's broadcast of that. You know, he ends up being much more involved on what he had once derided as a nanny state. You know, I heard what Vince had to say, and it seems like he's done some very interesting work in reporting on this. We're at a conflicted moment because at the same time there appears to be something of a clamor for policing popular culture as represented by broadcast television. Cable television continues to push its boundaries. There's basic TV, which is fundamentally not very regulated in terms of content. Then there's premium TV, where you can see a ton of stuff, very explicit language, explicit violence, fairly simulated sexual activities. And on pay-per-view, it's as the profits appear to grow, you know, they're following the growth of extremely hardcore pornographic materials available to people.
Though even on the pay side, Michael Moore's admittedly very contentious Fahrenheit 9/11 got pulled by Comcast, even out in cable land.
And that's related issue, but that's a question of the ideological wars, it seems to me, as opposed to the question of obscenity and decency.
Eric Bollert in Montclair, New Jersey, we're glad to have you with us tonight. All this came to a particular kind of head around this PBS cartoon character and his travels across the country, postcards from Buster. There, it seems to be getting into something other than indecency. How would you describe what went on with the PBS situation?
Politics is the best word. Buster is the spinoff from the popular children's series Arthur, and in this episode he travels all around the country and visits different cultures and local customs. And in this episode he visited Vermont to learn about maple syrup, and he visited two families that were headed up by two moms. And Margaret Spellings, who the new Secretary of Education, sort of sought it out, sort of a needle in the haystack, and decided that this was inappropriate, and told PBS to sort of in no uncertain terms that there would be problems if PBS distributed that to its 300-plus stations around the country. So PBS, after initially reviewing it and letting its affiliates know that, you know, you might want to take a look at this, this is somewhat unconventional, About 4 days later, decided they weren't going to distribute it. It's very rare for PBS not to distribute a single episode within a larger series.
Now, a few stations have come back and said they will air it, but most apparently are not. Interesting in that this was one of the very first things Margaret Spellings did as Education Secretary, almost before she officially took office.
Within hours, literally, of her second day, this 27-minute episode became the most important thing on her agenda.
Do you see this as part of the push or the pushback that began with Janet Jackson's breast a year ago? Is this a political agenda piggybacking on the indecency issue?
I see this separate. I don't see it as within the indecency obscenity debate. This is just old-fashioned politics and who gets to control the purse strings for PBS and who gets to yell loudest in terms of objecting to its content and what PBS, the sort of hoops it has to jump through in Washington with Republican control.
But Vince Horiuchi in Salt Lake City, I wonder if a year ago, before this great engine of pushback got fired up, if Margaret Spellings would have felt quite as free or quite as quick to jump on that.
I wonder about that too, because, I mean, it was one of the first things that she had publicly talked about after going into this position. I mean, you know, one of the sad things about that particular incident is and I have to underscore this by saying that I haven't seen that particular episode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly, but I know the show, and I've seen the show Postcards from Buster, and it's a show that is primarily about, learning about diversity and different cultures around the country. He's visited other places, including Salt Lake City, where he's met Mormon families.
Right.
And here was an episode that simply, this was my understanding, this was a particular segment in which the couple, the same-sex couple, was kind of very much in the background.
He was learning about maple sugaring in Vermont, but there was a little diversity lesson tucked in there.
Right. And, you know, the thing is, the irony is here you have the Secretary of Education who instead wants to withhold information from these same-sex couples exist in America, and here is a show that says these are just one of many types of different couples in America that exist. And, you know, as I had said in the story that I had written about this particular incident, the fact that both PBS stations here in Utah were not going to show the episode, you know, I had an executive director from a gay and lesbian bisexual community center say, look, these couples have children. They are in America, and they deserve dignity and respect. And here is the so-called Secretary of Education who is saying, well, there's something that maybe kids shouldn't have to learn about. And even then, it wasn't, you know, the focus of the show. It just says these people exist. And I think that's one of the saddest things about that particular incident.
And on 300-some stations, it's off. Let's turn to our callers. Kathleen's calling from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a couple of points. I was just sitting here before the show came on talking to my son about the halftime show last night.
Yeah, Paul McCartney.
He said it was the best halftime show he's ever seen.
All right.
And we both decided if they could just not do a censorship thing, just do it on lack of talent. If someone really lacks a lot of talent, get them off TV.
No, but what if they're talented but naked, Kathleen?
Well, that might be a little more interesting, but I don't know. I have to say that there has been some stuff on TV, watching it with my son. I kind of monitor what he watches
mm-hmm.
a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it got a little raunchy there for a while, and I hate to say that I'm glad it got cleaned up, but I'm a real free speech person at the same time, so it's bad that they use the Janet Jackson thing to push their political agenda, the Republicans and the censorship people. I don't like that part. But some of the, you know, the cartoons that are kind of geared for adults but get kind of mixed up with what's going on there, they're kind of raunchy.
No question about it.
Yeah.
Kathleen, let us pick it up with our guest here, David Folkenflik. Here's the tension. I mean, Kathleen wants her son, even at 15, and maybe even herself, to be protected from an element of what's clearly out there and would be more voluminous if there weren't some pushback. On the other hand, she doesn't want censorship. She wants free speech.
Well, and she's trying to navigate exactly the issues that you laid out. And, you know, it speaks to something I mentioned before, which is that it's not – although politics drives a lot of this – the objections to the decency issues, you know, there are real families there who have nothing to do with professional politics or advocacy groups who are, you know, trying to make sure their kids can enjoy, you know, popularly based entertainment and not be, you know, rushed through adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
one of the things that's interesting about this in some ways is just that, you know, these are tough things that different people have different sensibilities about. When the broadcasters were really the only game, they would, you know, it tend to have a sort of self-regulating effect
right.
because they wanted to appeal to everybody
mm-hmm.
and tens of hundreds of million, you know,
and over 100 million they shared the market. They could sort of define what was offered.
Right. And as cable began to siphon people off, often with edgier fare, broadcast television became, you know, somewhat apprehensive and anxious about their own place. They no longer could utterly dictate what people watched and when they watched it.
So they started
and
to,
so they started
it up
to emulate
and off
we go. Chase a little bit, chase MTV's values, chase HBO's values. The head of NBC once famously wrote a memo saying, you know, it's unfair. You know, they can do The Sopranos and get away with mob bosses whacking each other and with language and violence that we just can't replicate. How do we get around this? And it was sort of a lament. Well, NBC still gets higher ratings than HBO or other cable. But, you know, it's a nervousness on their part. And so you see this sort of back and forth between trying to do very wholesome family shows and trying to do edgier fare to make sure that they get the coveted younger viewers.
A very real tension there. I want to turn to Los Angeles now. We're joined from L.A. by Laura Mahaney. She's Director of Corporate and Entertainment Affairs for the Parents Television Council. It's a conservative advocacy group that's been at the forefront of the national debate over television decency. Laura Mahaney, thanks for being with us tonight.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
So as I understand it, your group has been very influential in getting that million-plus complaints flooding into the FCC in the last year. How do you turn out that kind of big response to things that your members see on television?
Well, you know, I do want to say this. We're actually a nonpartisan group. Our founder was conservative, but like my executive director is actually very liberal. And I think that's why you get as many complaints as you do, because it's really not a partisan issue. Like your previous caller said, you know, there are times when content does step over the line, and I think people were fed up. You know, they finally had reached their you know, maximum of diving for the remote control, and I think that's why you saw the complaints you saw last year.
President Bush said recently, I forget his exact words, but he said that he's a First Amendment guy, a free speech guy, and he said he thought basically families should just turn off the television if they didn't like what was there. What do you say to that?
Well, I think he said a couple of other things. He said parents are the first line of defense, which mm-hmm. we wholeheartedly agree with. What I disagree with him about, and what even the Supreme Court said in a, you know, in its ruling on indecency, was that telling somebody to turn off the television is like telling somebody who's been mugged that they should have just run away. The offense has already occurred. So people actually do turn off the television a lot, but they're still upset by what they've seen, whether it be, you know, Janet Jackson's incident or actually the stuff that we're more concerned about.
Such as?
Anal sex, oral sex, masturbation, and I'm talking about stuff that's on radio as well. Pedophilia, songs about raping 12-year-old girls and how to dispose of their bodies, simple things like that.
Simple things. Those are all grotesque. Those are head-turners by the time you get to the end of that list and rough. But let me ask you at another sort of part of the topography of this whole issue. What about the PBS show Postcards from Buster and the segment that was supposed to run on the cartoon Rabbit visiting a gay family in Vermont? Did you have a position? Do you have a position on that one?
Well, actually, we don't take positions on social issues. I don't really know that much about the show, so I want to be very careful. But my understanding is that they had done several shows on different religions,
families of different faiths and backgrounds,
Islam and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the hard part is when you start talking about, social concerns that people have, they do get very divided, such as abortion or, you know, same-sex couples. So I just think that, you know, it was a hot topic that was going to get lightning no matter what.
But you didn't turn your group, your campaign out on that particular show?
Nope, we sure didn't.
So not yours to pile on there. Laura Mahaney, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. Laura Mahaney joined us from L.A. She's with the Parents Television Council. Eric Bollert, there's a big group that's monitoring decency, but they say, as you kind of said earlier, this was not their issue, the gay family in Vermont.
Yeah, no, I think they are. I think they do have their hands full just monitoring the morning shows on FM radio and monitoring, you know, what used to be called the family hour, 8 to 9 o'clock, which has long ago evaporated. I don't think they saw this as obscenity or indecency. I think it was much more, you know, no, there was no. The interesting thing was, I mean, Margaret Spellings decided that was her issue. There was no grassroots rebellion against the show. There were none of these advocacy groups contacting the stations. It all happened so fast. This is a case where it just started at the top and worked its way down.
On the other hand, not far from this real estate, we saw James Dobson with Focus on the Family going after SpongeBob SquarePants for supposedly being a gay advocate somehow.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
it was just about the same week, which was a sort of humorous coincidence, humorous, depressing coincidence. And, you know, obviously the gay marriage and the ramifications became a hot topic after the November election, and I think that did give some groups and some ideologues sort of a feeling that let's push this stuff.
License
really
and room to go. Eric Bullard,
yeah.
I know we've got to let you go, but thank you so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Eric Bullard, senior writer with Salon.com. We're talking tonight about decency, indecency, and the heat on American TV culture. What do you think? When the spotlight fell on Janet's breast, did you think Buster Bunny and SpongeBob SquarePants and Private Ryan would take the hit? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about decency, indecency, and the heat on American television culture. You can join the conversation tonight. Is the nation's ire over indecency being poured into a narrow political agenda? And do we have balance now, or censorship, even self-censorship? And I guess this, if the nation's so upset about the risque, why are we all watching Desperate Housewives? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight from Washington by David Folkenflik. He covers media issues for National Public Radio. From Salt Lake City, Utah, by Vince Horiucci. He's television critic for the Salt Lake City Tribune. And right now, from Hinesburg, Vermont, by Gillian Piper. She and her partner, along with their children, were featured on the episode of the PBS children's show Postcards from Buster that was targeted by the new Secretary of Education, Margaret Spellings, for being inappropriate and booted from 300-plus PBS television stations. Gillian Piper, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Gillian, I'd like to get your sense of what hit your family when all this came down on you. Do you feel that this goes all the way back to the kind of pushback against indecency that roared up a year ago, or is something else going on here?
Wow. I feel that mayhem hit us when we got the call from WGBH that the episode was being pulled by PBS. And immediately my sense of where this was coming from was directly related to Janet Jackson and all this kind of stuff. And we are just overwhelmed with the craziness that's gone on across this country about this particular episode.
So how do you connect the dots of what happened, of the storm that brewed up and ended up hitting you? What's the kind of connecting of dots you do?
Well, it's you know, it goes from the decency stuff that happened with the Super Bowl all the way into the election, where the TV critics and everybody around started going on with the moral values.
Mm-hmm. That had swung the election. That was the issue.
That was the issue, and swung me into a fit of depression. And then we got the call, and then prior to that, hearing about SpongeBob and really being really angry about the fact that the real issue behind the SpongeBob stuff was that they didn't like the tolerance pledge, and then to be slammed with our own pain on this whole issue, it connects really quickly and easily.
So do you see what started out as a campaign for decency or against indecency as having morphed or been turned into something else?
Well, I think Frank Rich of the New York Times said it really well, right? It's really, this is all about camouflaging what the government is really trying to do, and it's an opportunity to pull our attention away from what really needs to be done, like things in Iraq and things dealing with the tsunami and the deficit and Social Security, and that's part of what gets me so irate, because my family is at the center of something, and we've been hit and hurt by it. And it's not really what matters to them. What really matters to them is having all of us not see what's really going on.
But clearly, beyond Iraq and tax issues, the budget we'll talk about later, maybe diversity and tolerance have ended up in the bullseye here as well, along with the indecency issue.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so frustrating that all of a sudden what is normal is abnormal, and that, and again, Ellen Goodman was another great point that she made, that, you know, what do we do now when tolerance is intolerable?
And what does one family in Vermont do when they've taken sort of the brunt of it? It sounds like a rough road, but we hear you thinking it through, working it through. Gillian Piper, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Let's turn to our callers. Matthew's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Matthew. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What are you thinking, Matthew?
I draw a contrast, I guess, between what's out on the airways for entertainment and what's out on the airways for some commercial purpose, for commercial gain, for industrial profit.
Well, it's all commercial at some level, isn't it? I mean, most of it's for-profit television.
To a degree, but I just draw the distinction between what's happening on television that my children are watching and mm-hmm. how the choices are narrowing, and yet I watch what happens on in the advertising itself.
Like what?
And I find I have to mute the television set when they show a middle-aged couple in bathtubs at sunset talking about when you're in the mood, will everything work?
And suddenly we're into the land of erectile dysfunction and call your doctor if you're past 4 hours and all the rest.
Exactly. And, when are they going to start putting graphs up there with what portion of enlargement Whatton gets and all of this, graphic repugnant stuff that I don't think belongs on television.
Right. So never mind the programming. Let's look at the ads for a minute. David Folkenflik, it is interesting as medicine has moved into this kind of lifestyle sexuality area. My gosh, the stuff there, they couldn't run at halftime.
Well, it's
not on the stage anyway.
It's pretty astounding to, hear words like the ones the caller's alluding to being talked about in a sort of semi-clinical, semi-winking way.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since the pharmaceuticals were, opened up to this kind of advertising, you've begun to hear a lot more about all kinds of bodily functions you never expected to. I think it's a fair question. It's one of those cases where I guess there are those who would argue this is where the family needs to sort of be the watchdogs, as this father sounds like he is.
So the mute button when the erectile dysfunction ad comes on, you get to know it and you may be hitting it, or else you've got a lot of explaining to do.
Well, I mean, it's just, it's ubiquitous. You can't avoid it in magazines or in television. For all of the clamor to get younger audience members, to somehow trap them down, chase them, put them in a box and force them to watch your television shows, it's actually often middle-aged and older viewers who have disposable income and are watching these things, and therefore, suddenly you're seeing these pharmaceuticals, which are liberated to advertising now, are going after these clients or consumers and trying to pitch things directly to them. So you start to see things about incontinence and dysfunction and other things that, might not be wonderful topics for dinner conversation.
Might not. Vince Ariucci, I wonder, you heard earlier our conversation with Laura Mahaney with the Parents Television Council. They've been very active. You heard her describe what they're targeting and what they're not targeting. She's saying, look, we just want to go after these kind of out-of-bounds sexuality, essentially, on television. Is that how you see these groups affect their target and focus?
Well, I mean, as a matter of fact, Brent Bozell had sent me an email asking me to please stop referring them to them as a conservative watchdog, media watchdog group.
Brent Bozell, the head of that group,
the
Parents
head of
TV
the
Council.
Parents Television Council.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're very much a faith-based conservative watchdog group. I mean, for example, they conducted a study at the end of last month that looked at the number of religious references in television programming, where they literally counted the number of religious references and then termed which ones were positive, neutral, and negative, and bemoaned the fact that NBC was the leader in negative religious depictions on television. I think they're very much a conservative group and a faith-based group.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say is that certainly you can just – it seems to me fair to consider them culturally conservative group. There are Democrats who have worked with them on issues. There are members who don't consider them necessarily to be consider themselves to be conservatives. I'm not trying to dispute your assessment. At the same time, it's a tricky waters. You know, there are those who consider, for example, the acceptance or acknowledgement of gay couples as itself an indecent area, and others who feel that the sort of it takes a much more explicit description, as occurs on frequently, for example, on sitcoms on broadcast television.
But of course,
for
one,
something to be objectionable.
Yeah, but once you get into that territory, then you're really picking up what's often a kind of a religious right view of what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And as you say, Vince Horiucci, they're fairly upfront about where they're coming from on that side. On the other hand, you know, at what point is it too much for one religious perspective to be guiding national media?
And yeah, I think that one of the things that's dangerous, and we need to, of course, emphasize, and that was said earlier, is that, you know, Media Week magazine earlier had indicated that more than 99% of the complaints that had come into the Federal Communications Commission in the first 9 months were from the Parents Television Council. Now, here we're letting one or two specific media watchdog groups try to dictate through the FCC what the rest of us want to watch on television. One of the problems, too, and this is sort of off topic a little bit, but I'm always wondering why no one talks about the fact that, I mean, everyone says that parents should have control of what they want to watch on television, but they never talk about the fact that every newer television, at least several years old, all new television sets have V-chips, all have parental safeguards put in place. Every cable box, every satellite receiver box has parental safeguards in which you can check off the channels that you don't want to watch, or you don't want to watch a particular program that's rated above a certain rating. Yet we never hear the PTC or the AFA say, American Family Association, say that these are things that parents can use to put the power of what they want to watch on television with them.
Of course, when it suddenly jumps out at you in the Super Bowl halftime, that's pretty hard to prepare for.
Right. Well, and that's true. And when that initially happened, I understood the fact that, well, the Super Bowl, in theory, is this family program that everybody watches and they don't want to be caught off guard. And I did complain about that. But I also think now it's going beyond into areas that I think are absurd. And we talk about the incident involving the episode on ER and, of course, Saving Private Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And now the PTC is trying to move into the areas of basic cable, or I should say expanded cable television networks like FX, for example.
So they want to govern even what you're paying for.
Right. And what they want to do is they want to try and push this notion that we would be able to purchase television cable channels a la carte. In other words, we would say we don't want MTV, but we just want Nickelodeon.
Well, okay. I mean, I can understand the argument for that anyway, and it's tough territory we're navigating here.
Yeah, and there's a couple of problems I have with that. Is one, I think it would be very expensive. I mean, it's just sort of the same notion as buying food a la carte as opposed to buying a whole dinner. And secondly, I mean, a lot of other channels, smaller channels, that really get on your cable system because they are part of a larger package of other channels. In other words, I don't know if this is really a true example, but for example, if NBC says, well, if you want Bravo, then you have to get the Sci-Fi channel.
So maybe the little channels would fall off if it went to a a la carte menu.
Exactly. We would start losing more and more choice. And I sort of take exception to what Matthew, the caller, was saying, that, you know, there's less and less to choose from to watch on television for his family. I mean, we're now living in the age of cable. We're getting more and more cable stations, and there is plenty to watch.
And yet, sort of keeping some kind of rein on that within a family can be tough. Let's get another call here. Brian's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to say that although I'm against censorship in general, I'm just really disturbed. I'm not disturbed at all by the nudity and sex that I see on TV, because what little there is doesn't disturb me, and I wouldn't be bothered at all by any more. However, a lot of the violence, I will shut off a TV show if it's too gory. And I was really shocked by the Saving Private Ryan incident, that there were stations that were going to pull it off the air because of swearing, where it's one of the goriest movies I've ever seen, and it's a brilliant piece of cinema,
mm-hmm.
but it's just so gory. That would be the reason I would expect it to be taken off the air. And I was just kind of horrified that parents are more afraid of their kids hearing somebody say the F word than they are of seeing somebody without a face.
So never mind the nudity. You're worried about the violence. And, of course, that's a trade-off we've heard about, Brian. Thanks for calling, David Falkenflik. I mean, once you begin, there are some lines to be drawn here. You can understand people don't want to be shocked at what they see, but then deciding where to draw those lines, Brian looks on over to violence and says, well, let's do some controlling there, too.
Well, these are all contested spheres, and, you know, broadcast is regulated in a way that print is not. It's one of these areas that the government has the ability to say, we're going to set certain standards, particularly before certain hours. If I'm not mistaken, the Supreme Court in recent years handed down a ruling that got at sort of what Vince was talking about a bit earlier, which is that they said, you know, because there's V-chip ability, we're not going to assign certain channels that contain particularly racy, explicit material behind a wall where you have to pay explicitly for that channel, because there are means by which parents can technologically sort of keep that away from small children.
Right.
You know, there are people who are upset most by violence. There are people upset by explicit language. There are people upset by sexuality. There are people upset by sexuality handled flippantly, as though it's a matter to joke about, which certainly drove a lot of the sitcoms of the 1990s. You know, Seinfeld was an enormous hit. Friends was in some ways perhaps an even bigger ratings hit. They traded on such material all the time.
Do you see what Frank Rich called a wave of self-censorship unrivaled since the McCarthy era afoot in the United States today, David Falkenflik?
Well, I think there's a combining of a couple of things. He's talking about – my sense was in reading his story, his column from yesterday's New York Times, was that he was talking – collapsing together the question of decency, in which the government is taking some issue, and the question of ideology, in which you saw some private broadcasters making their own decisions on things like does Private Ryan cross the line with language? Is Nightline, as occurred you know, late last spring, crossing the line by reading an honor roll of the dead in Iraq?
But the Private Ryan, hold back. But that was on out of fear that there might be fines from the FCC coming down the pike. At least that's what the stations who did it said. And aren't these things being collapsed by the cultural moment as much as by a particular observer?
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, the McCarthy era involved a lot of government leverage, and we should, you know, recognize that to invoke that is a pretty serious historical claim.
Vince Ariucci, let me put the same question to you. Do you see self-censorship unrivaled since the McCarthy era afoot here?
Well, I wasn't...
Goes back a little far for you.
That's right, a little far for me, but I do know that there's a big difference, and Saving Private Ryan is a pretty example that 2 years ago, these were 68 ABC affiliates along with the rest of the ABC affiliates that were showing that program uncut and unedited with all of the language and all of the violence. You know, they showed Schindler's List in the same way. And now, last year, 2 years later, they declined to show the program. So I think that there's definitely an air that's going on right now in which they're very nervous. PBS, which really has never really had a history of censoring programs or declining to air programs. In fact, when I talked to the PBS affiliate here in Salt Lake City, he's only remembered of about two other shows since he had worked here in which they ever declined to air anything on their network. And now PBS is already either censoring or declining to show something twice.
Well, it started with one breast, and where it ends, nobody knows, but it's a fascinating conversation. Vince Horiucci at the Salt Lake City Tribune, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
David Falkenflik, media correspondent for NPR, thank you very much for joining us.
Good to join you.
Listeners, thanks for being with us. You can continue the conversation at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.